So if you are confused about the second little half of this reading, then you are certainly not alone. The best way I can describe it is to say that Matthew is quoting Jesus, who is quoting David, who is quoting God. And that's why it's so confusing, because grammatically we can't really frame that in a way that makes sense. But Jesus, I think, here is basically challenging the Pharisees about their understanding of who the Messiah will be, indicating that the Messiah will be more than the son of David. The Messiah will be, as Matthew explains elsewhere in Jesus' words, the son of God and the son of all humanity. What, though, of the words about the two great commandments? On the surface, loving God and loving our neighbor seems so simple. But as any of us who try know, to make a serious lifelong effort to live out these simple precepts is a struggle. Bringing up questions like, who is God? And who is my neighbor? And what does it mean to love them? In other words, loving God and neighbor is the most challenging and yet the most important labor of our lives. And it is labor. It requires intention and effort and focus and vulnerability and strength and sacrifice. Loving is not, as scholar Douglas Hare explains, merely warm feelings. Integral to love, he suggests, is the stubbornness of unwavering commitment. Love is, I think, one of those words we use so liberally and about such varied circumstances that it can come to refer to almost everything and end up meaning nothing at all. Indeed, sometimes the word love is used when the action being taken is far from loving. Yesterday, I was at the Safe Church training. If you don't know what Safe Church is, it's a training which is graciously provided by the diocese to help churches function in ways that build up healthy communities in which all members are safe. And at this training, it was suggested that perhaps writing a multi-page email to another member of your parish or to the rector or to the bishop, haranguing said individual about everything they are doing wrong, and then concluding with the message with the phrase, in the love of Christ, is perhaps not so loving after all. And yet, loving cannot merely be reduced to being nice either. Jesus is quite simply not always nice. Lately, we've encountered a number of passages from Matthew's gospel in which Jesus is anything but nice. He publicly accuses some of the Pharisees of being hypocrites, and he tells parables in which they and other religious leaders are painted as arrogant allies of the empire. How is this loving? Love, as Jesus lives it, is confronting as well as comforting. Now, of course, not every confrontation is an act of love. One thing I notice is that when Jesus confronts another with severe, albeit honest words, he always seems to be addressing concerns about right relationship, pointing to their judgment, harsh treatment, or neglect of others. He does not make judgments about people's purity or their holiness. He questions whether they are living rightly with others. I think this is what leaves Douglas Hare to describe the love of Jesus as the stubbornness of unwavering commitment. Paul, of course, very compellingly writes about what love is and what love is not, and he compares the absence of love to loud, mistuned instruments when they are making noise but not playing music. This, I think, is a helpful metaphor. How do we play music and not just make noise? There's a wonderful story from the Babylonian Talmud about the approach of two different rabbis in responding to a person seeking relationship with the one God. The story goes like this. Once there was a Gentile who came before Rabbi Shammai and said to him, "Convert me on the condition that you can teach me the whole Torah in the time I can stand on one foot." Rabbi Shammai pushed him aside with his measuring stick that he was holding. The same fellow, though, came before Rabbi Hillel, and Hillel converted him by saying, "That which is despicable to you, do not do to others. This is the whole Torah, and the rest is commentary. Go and learn it." The first rabbi assumes that the person's question is not genuine, that he's just being difficult, that he could never measure up. But Rabbi Hillel gets to the heart of the matter, and this is what Jesus does as well. Jesus does not say that the other laws are irrelevant or can be easily dismissed. These two great commandments, he indicates, are the soil and the sun and the water and the air that give life to all other precepts and ethical demands. As Paul writes, "If I speak in the tongues of mortals and angels but do not have love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to move mountains but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give away all my possessions, and if I hand over my body so that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing." But the world, and indeed our own lives, seem so often to have far too much making noise and far too little playing music. Playing music, particularly in an ensemble, requires far more than musical prowess. It requires attentiveness to the conductor and to the other musicians. It requires deep listening of oneself and others. It requires continuous adjustments to keep in tune and to join in but not overwhelm the overall sound of the ensemble. It requires not only playing the correct notes, but holding the spaces between. I can remember one of my music teachers training us to hold ourselves absolutely still and silent at the end of a piece until, as he explained, the audience has had the opportunity to hear the silence that is always the final note. Only sometimes do all of these various pieces fit together in such a way that beautiful music occurs. Such moments are sacred, for they are born of mystery as well as attentiveness and work and effort. Loving, I think, is like that too. On the evening of September 11th, 2001, the famed cellist Yo-Yo Ma was scheduled to perform with the Colorado Springs Philharmonic. After the morning attack on the World Trade Center, the organizers had to have a conversation about whether to cancel the concert or proceed. But Ma would not hear of canceling. They did, though, change the program, adding Samuel Barber's Adagio for Strings. Some of you probably know that piece, a well-known piece that some have called the saddest piece of music ever written. After that piece was played, Ma took his chair and joined the last row of cellists, rather than being in the focal point as a soloist, as if to say that in such a time, we all must place ourselves in the role of listener, of ensemble member, of family member, all vulnerable, all equal. For in such a time, it is more tempting than any other time to become a clanging gong or a noisy cymbal. The biggest challenges to loving God and loving our neighbor come when we feel vulnerable, afraid, and small. Isaac Stern famously wrote that music happens between the notes. Love, I think, often happens between the notes, too. Loving has to be practiced, it has to be learned in community, but it also requires one to appreciate the silence as well as the notes. And neither real music nor real loving are about success or perfection. Yo-Yo Ma has shared that when he is playing on stage and something doesn't go right, he often thinks of Julia Child, dropping something on the floor and then just saying, oh, well, just pick it up and start again. Ma says that even when big mistakes happen on stage, if you keep your heart in it, everyone stays with you. Because, as he explains, even if nobody wants to acknowledge that the chicken has fallen on the floor, they're not going to let that one moment spoil their evening. Because they know that they're not here to watch out for bad things to happen. They're here for a greater purpose. And that greater purpose is that we're communing together. It's not about proving something, but about sharing something. It's not about proving something, but about sharing something. This, I think, is the heart of loving. Now, why am I weaving this metaphor about music? It's because we're tempted, I think, when considering the commandments, even the commandments to love, to think of them in overly legalistic terms, to forget that loving cannot be reduced to an intellectual exercise. The reformer John Calvin wrote often about the world as being a theater and human beings as performers. He explains, "The whole world is a theater for the display of divine goodness, wisdom, justice, and power. The church," in this metaphor, he adds, "is the orchestra." The writer Marilyn Robinson reflects on Calvin's use of the theatrical and surmises that just perhaps this means that God actually enjoys us. If that is the case, then perhaps God appreciates it most when we are playing good music, each playing our different notes, each being specialists of quite different instruments, and all of us sometimes doing the musical equivalent of dropping the chicken on the floor. And yet, there are these sublime, sacred moments when we are playing together stunningly beautiful music. Loving is not as simple as just doing good things for others. It is more akin to learning to play music with others, looking to God and to one another to enter into a togetherness, a sharing, a communion, understanding that each being's role is essential for the music of divine goodness, wisdom, justice, and love to be heard. Though it may be a bit odd for us to think of loving as being a commandment, recall that when these commandments are given, they are done so in the context of God reminding the people who God is for them. God says, "I am the one who led you up out of Egypt. I am the one who liberated you." So I think these commandments for us are a reminder that it is God who started singing the love song, and we are the ones who are called to respond. Amen.